You're listening to an ESA podcast brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. ESA, promoting the science of ecology.
I'm Terrence Houston, and this is The Ecologist Goes to Washington, a podcast program by the Ecological Society of America, where we interview scientists involved with public policy. Today, I'll be interviewing Lindsay Deal with West Virginia University. Lindsay is one of this year's four Graduate Student Policy Award winners. You're an environmental geographer. Can you explain what that means?
Yeah, so geography is a really broad discipline. Basically, almost anything could be geography as long as it varies across space. And even the concept of space is pretty broad and sometimes vague. And in fact, it's a running joke in our department that during your thesis defense, you should always be prepared to answer the question, how is this geography? So I see environmental geography as the study of environmental processes that vary over space. And I focus my work on forested environments at a more regional scale. So I use a lot of satellite imagery and computer mapping, and I usually combine them with some sort of field work to study forest health and forest disturbance. So in my work, environmental geography really ends up being a combination of several different disciplines, including geography, biology, ecology, and also a little bit of social science, because a lot of geographers also focus on the social, economic, and political sides of their research areas.
Your research focuses on improving management of the Chesapeake Bay watershed. Could you talk a little bit about your work and what you hope it contributes to human society?
Yeah, so the Chesapeake Bay watershed covers a really huge area. It's about 65,000 square miles, so it's virtually impossible to have clear measurements of everything that flows into and out of the bay from every corner of the watershed. So to deal with this impossibility, the Environmental Protection Agency fills in measurement gaps by using these complex computer models that are really trained to simulate stuff that's going on in the real world and that changes with different environmental conditions, things like precipitation, temperature levels, etc. So the watershed model is the model that's used to estimate pollutants like excess nutrients, things like that, that run off the land and into the waterways that eventually drain to the bay. So what my work is attempting to do is to incorporate more of what we know about forest health into this watershed model. And overall, forests serve as more like a buffer that absorbs excess nutrients and prevents them from reaching the bay. But a forest's ability to buffer depends a lot on how healthy and functional that forest is, which can vary quite a bit over space and time, really, making this all a very geographical question. So what I'm doing is using satellite imagery to create maps of forest health and disturbance at different points in time. And I'm hoping what we can do is incorporate these maps into the models and really increase the understanding about how forests contribute to the overall health of the bay, either positively or negatively, as the case may be. And this will hopefully provide a more spatially detailed guideline for directing management efforts. So it's my overall hope that by understanding landscape dynamics at different scales and in different places, how things change over time also, we can really work together to target management efforts a lot more precisely than we're doing right now.
In what way does the Environmental Protection Agency collaborate or confer with local communities in promoting the restoration of the Chesapeake Bay?
I guess I can't speak for the entire EPA, but most of my experience has been working pretty closely with the Chesapeake Bay Program, which is based in Annapolis, Maryland, and is has really close links with the EPA and as some other federal agencies. But from what I've seen, the Bay Program is pretty unique, and it calls itself a regional partnership. And this partnership includes federal and state agencies like the EPA, the U.S. Forest Service, NOAA, things like that, local governments, also nonprofit organizations, for example, the Chesapeake Bay Foundation, the Earth Corps, Earth Conservation Corps, Anacostia Watershed Society, and the National Geographic Society, just to kind of name a few, and also universities like Penn State, William & Mary, University of Maryland, West Virginia University, etc. There's a whole list of universities that are also partners. So all of these partners work together to manage the bay. So it's an interesting setup, and it's complicated, but it's also pretty necessary because the bay watershed spans six different states, Virginia, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Delaware, New York, West Virginia, and also the District of Columbia. So without a partnership like this, it would be extremely complicated to manage an area this big that spans so many political boundaries. And it is still complicated, but at least there's a mechanism in place which is this partnership, that brings all of these interests together and focuses them on a single issue, which is the health of the Chesapeake Bay. So my feeling is that the EPA, at least as it relates to the Bay Program, does a pretty good job of collaborating and conferring with local communities as well as regional nonprofits and other interests that are all dedicated to the health of the Bay.
How did you get involved with the EPA START Fellowship Program, and in what way does this agency program aid in your career development as a researcher?
Well, the STAR Fellowship has really given me the chance to branch out from my little bubble at West Virginia University and really get involved with different efforts all around the Bay watershed. So I spent a year living in D.C. working pretty closely with the Chesapeake Bay Program, and now I'm based in Philadelphia, where I can pretty easily drive out and meet with different forest managers and other people just working throughout the watershed. I heard about the STAR Fellowship through several different professors over the past few years. I know it's a pretty well-known grant program, a fellowship program, and I decided to apply for it just after discussing it with my advisor. And the things that stood out to me about it were that it was very focused on more applied research, and also really focused on linking science and policy. So I felt like the fellowship was a really good fit for the work I'm doing. And it's really fantastic for my career development because it gives me a chance, it really gives me flexibility, I guess, to focus all of my energy on this project, which also happens to be my dissertation, and also to explore different avenues of the work that I really might not have otherwise been able to do, such as spending time in Annapolis with the Bay Program, and also just reaching out to different state and local forest managers throughout the watershed. So basically, it's afforded me time and funding, which are always an issue for graduate students who are, on one hand, trying to make ends meet and not go too far into debt, but also building up meaningful research projects that really make a difference in society and the environment. So the STAR Fellowship has really provided this strong foundation for beginning what I hope is a meaningful career that makes a difference.
During your meetings on Capitol Hill, you met with congressional offices of varied ideologies from the Maryland and Pennsylvania regions. What type of reception did you get from congressional staff regarding your message that federal support for science is important? Was it what you expected?
So even though I lived in D.C. for a little while, I had never met with anyone from any congressional offices, so this was a totally new experience for me, and it was intimidating and exciting, and also just a really big unknown for me. So over the course of the congressional visits day, I got to meet with staff from, I think, six different offices, from a range of political ideologies. And I expected some to be more receptive to science funding discussions than others. I also expected staffers to be really busy and for many of the meetings to feel really rushed. But this was probably my biggest surprise that that wasn't totally the case. So even in offices where it was pretty clear that science funding wasn't a top priority or may have even been pretty far down the list, the staffers were very interested and willing to listen with their full attention. So, and that was surprising to me. I thought it would feel really rushed. So I left all the meetings feeling like we'd been heard. But I also left wondering if anything would come from the things that we shared. And maybe that's something I'm still wondering, and I'm not sure when I will actually know the answer to that. But I was really impressed by how well everybody listened and really seemed to value the time that we took to make the visit. So I'm still wondering what kind of impact our visits made, but nobody was at all hostile, even people who seemed like they weren't as supportive of funding towards science. I always got the feeling like we were being heard.
Were there particular aspects of what you said, your research or background or points you made during your meetings that seemed to resonate particularly well with policymakers?
Yeah, so my research is a little bit more immediately applied than a lot of the other students in our group. So I felt that was a valuable thing to discuss, particularly in offices where basic science, frankly, seemed pretty poorly understood. So I felt like my more applied research really built on some of the basic science that others were doing, and helped clarify the link between some of the foundational basic science work and more applied work that I'm doing. I also felt like my work on the Chesapeake Bay was pretty well received by offices that are within the Bay states, especially Maryland, where we met with staffers from Senator Mikulski and Senator Cardin's offices. And I also felt like talking with Congressman Brady's staff, he's the congressman from my district in Pennsylvania, where I live in Philadelphia, that was also pretty well received just because I live in the district, so I felt like they particularly valued what I was saying. One of the messages I felt like we were getting from maybe people who weren't prioritizing science funding kind of goes back to that where I feel like science is basic science seemed poorly understood. basically we got the impression that if something wasn't immediately marketable, then it wasn't valuable. So I felt like that was where showing more applied research and how it linked with basic science was particularly valuable.
And finally, what advice would you give to other young scientists seeking to engage in public policy?
Well, I really feel like you have to put yourself out there and seek out opportunities to get involved in policy-related research. So applying for federal grants is a really good way to do that, because a lot of them are looking for research that benefits society and informs policymaking, specifically. The Graduate Student Policy Award was a really good way for me to get actual face time with policymakers and to get a firsthand glimpse at what things look like at the congressional level. Kind of gave me the avenue that I may not have had otherwise. And it also just helps to stay informed on issues that are important to your area of research, so you can adapt your work to things that are currently happening in the policy realm that surrounds your subject area. So those are general pieces of advice, but I feel like putting yourself out there and really seeking things out is the best way to get involved.
And that was Lindsay Deal with West Virginia University. Thanks so much for listening, and please join us next time on The Ecologist Goes to Washington.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. Music was provided by Dr. Nicholas Catelli. For a link to Dr. Catelli's homepage, more information about ESA, or additional podcasts, please visit www.esa.org. Thanks for listening.